Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Hey, good morning to you, Sherry Brownrigg, who is the founder of and president of Kennedy Brownrigg Group. I'm here in for Teresa Tomeo and so happy to be here. And it's the Feast of St. Ambrose and the Eve of the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. So much going on today, the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and of course the first Friday in Advent. So it's going to be a red-letter day, folks. I'm thinking it really is going to be. Have some great guests this hour. Be talking with EWTN's Doug Keck about what's happening there. Checking in with our friend Matthew Bunsen. We have a lot to talk about with Matthew. And then we'll finish up the show with Isabel Chow. Now, she is a student at UC Berkeley. Maybe you heard about this. She stood up for her faith despite persecution on campus. And it's going to be exciting to talk to her. She is really somebody who is a leader in the faith, and she paid a big price for that stand there, but she's not backing down. She is really, she's really someone to be proud of, and I'm excited to talk with her as well. I want to talk a little bit about praying for priests this morning. Now, I am part of an apostolate called Maria Regina Clary, and if you know your Latin, that's Mary Queen of the Clergy. And, you know, I don't actually have any shame about talking about this apostolate, because there's no money that ever changes hands. I'm telling you, we don't get any gain from it at all. The whole idea is simply to pray for priests. And when I was praying last night and said, all right, Lord, what would you like to for me to talk about? He said, talk about my priests. So I'm going to do that. And I want to tell you a little bit about Maria Regina Clary. Well, it was born in the heart of a wonderful priest by the name of Monsignor Peter Dunn. And he is in Omaha, Nebraska, where I live. And he was the last priest to have worked with Father Flanagan. And he died some years ago. Father Flanagan, of course, did Monsignor Dunn, I think, has been gone maybe 4 or 5 years now. But he really had a sense that those priests who were in purgatory really had no one to pray for them. And he said, we need to pray for those priests in purgatory, but more importantly, we need to pray for priests while they are here on earth. And he and his caretaker, a good friend of mine, Vicky Harrout, began to discern this urgent need to pray for priests in about 2006. And they had a First Friday prayer group that Monsignor had at his apartment on the campus of Boys Town. And that prayer group actually continues to this day. And a lot of priests actually participate. A lot of lay people do that. And then Monsignor Dunn and Vicky developed prayers that they put into a book. And they did that when Pope Benedict XVI announced the year for priests in 2009. We had started the apostolate before then. And when he announced that, we said, we've got to put this into a book form. And we made CDs of Monsignor Peter Dunn praying these prayers as well. And since then, those books have been going around the world. Those books and CDs have been going around the world to people who have been called to pray for priests. And I am telling you, there have been thousands of them. I have lost count. I mean, hundreds of thousands of books have been sent around the world. People all over the world have been praying for priests. And I guess the question right now, in the environment that we're in, the environment that we live in right now, we ask our question, you know, why would we pray for priests? Why would we? You know, we've got a Facebook page, Maria Regina Clary does. It's Praying for Our Priests. And somebody posted on Facebook, they said, I'm not going to pray for priests until they prove that they deserve our prayers. Oh, I was so saddened to read that. So saddened to read that. I mean, think about your own. If we all had to earn the right of someone to pray for us, if we had to earn that, nobody would be prayed for. And it just made me so very sad. And so I simply pray for this person, and I replied that, well, as Christians, we are called to pray for everyone, even those we do not like, even those we do not agree with, even those who sin we hate, we must pray. And I've got a brother who's a priest, and, you know, the ability to see the fact that by gosh, my brother's human. You know, he's still my little brother, although he has been set aside by God. And we need to see that our priests are human. And we also need to understand and accept that as humans, they will fail. They will. And yes, they will even sin. Mm-hmm. We can't excuse the sins that have come to light in the recent days, months, and years, but you know, we can forgive. We can pray for the victims first and foremost. Of course, we always do that. But we also need to pray for the souls of the priests who have committed these crimes, because they too are loved by God. And He desires, even though they have sinned, that they spend eternity with Him. He does not want them to be lost. And we absolutely must pray for those priests who are still in active ministry. Now, they work day in and day out to get us to heaven. Sometimes they fail, again, not only in getting us to heaven, but even in living out their station in life, that priestly office. But you know, God has set them apart. He has chosen them to bring His body and blood to us, the Eucharist. Now, without our priests, we cannot receive Christ. We know that. And it's funny for me, because when people say, why do you pray for priests, Sherry? You know, I just say, well, He had me at Eucharist. I don't need to know anything else beyond that. And of course I do. I do. I love the priesthood and want to pray for it. But honestly, if it were only that, then I would certainly go all out still, because the Eucharist is everything to us. Now, why would we talk about praying for priests on the eve of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Solemnity? Well, in this critical time for our church, you know, our priests are on the front lines of the battle, and Our Lady wants to take care of them. And how will she do that? She's going to do that with our help. Now, Maria Regina Clary, the apostolate, has been quietly carrying out the mission of prayer for over the past 12 years. She's asking us to be more visible. But she's not just asking this little apostolate to help. She's asking you, she's asking you, and she's asking you. She's asking all of us, each and every one of us, to step out into the open now, to step out in our parishes and to step out in the world to support and to pray and to intercede for her priests. And Our Lady needs her priest sons. She needs them holy and strong and faithful, because it is through them that she reaches the rest of us. So you can start now. You know, you can say a Hail Mary for your priest right now. You can get resources. There are resources all over the web. You can get them from us at prayingforourpriest.org. Prayer books and CDs are there. And as I mentioned, I don't feel the least bit shy about promoting this apostolate, because there's no charge for these resources. No one is making money. Well, maybe the printer is. He might be making some money. But we simply ask that you let Mary be your guide in how you handle that. And she has taken care of us just fine for 12 years, and that is not going to stop. But please, please pray for your priests. All right, now at 8 minutes past the hour, it is time for news. Former President George H.W. Bush is resting in peace after nearly a week of national mourning. Mark Mayfield has the story.
The 41st president was interred at his presidential library at Texas A&M yesterday. A private ceremony took place after Bush's casket was transported by train from Houston to College Station. Thousands of people lined the tracks to say goodbye to Bush. There was a dramatic military flyover after Bush's casket arrived at the presidential library and museum. Marines gave the former president a 21-gun salute.
Pope Francis will make an historic trip to the United Arab Emirates next year. The Vatican said yesterday that the Pope has accepted invitations from the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi and the Catholic Church in the United Arab Emirates. Francis is scheduled to visit February 3rd through the 5th. He'll be the first Catholic Pope to visit the Arabian Peninsula, and Catholic officials say the trip shows the importance of interreligious discussions as they work towards peace together. Prince Charles is praising the faith and courage of Christians around the world who are persecuted for their beliefs. The Prince of Wales says he's met many Christians over the years who have inspired him with their faith and courage to battle oppression and persecution, or even escape it. His comments were made during a service at Westminster Abbey on Tuesday, celebrating the contribution of Christians in the Middle East. He also praised Christians for their grace and ability to forgive, refusing to retaliate against their persecutors. The prince also said extremism and division are not inevitable and praised Jews, Muslims, and Christians who support each other and live together peacefully in parts of the region. Five Marines are still missing after a total of seven Marines were involved in an aircraft collision off Japan's southwest coast on Thursday. NBC's Hans Nichols has the latest.
Initially, the reports were that two of them ejected from the F-18. One of those pilots ended up dying, and now the search continues in some very difficult waters.
A second Marine rescued is in fair condition. The crash involved an F-18 Hornet fighter jet and a KC-130 fuel tanker. The cause of the crash remains under investigation. Police are investigating another bomb threat at the Manhattan building that houses CNN. The NYPD says the threat, phoned in about 10 o'clock last night by a man with a southern accent, claimed five bombs had been planted at the Time Warner Center. CNN was evacuated while news anchor Don Lemon was on the air, but no bombs were found. The Environmental Protection Agency is relaxing Obama-era restrictions on coal-fired power plants. Mark Mayfield reports.
EPA Chief Andrew Wheeler said the requirements to capture carbon dioxide emissions were keeping new plants from being built and putting a financial hardship on the coal industry. Wheeler is a former coal industry lobbyist. The Trump administration released a congressionally mandated report 2 weeks ago that said climate change is real and getting worse, and it was going to cost the U.S. economy hundreds of billions of dollars by the end of this century. President Trump has said he doesn't believe it. The coal industry in the U.S. has been struggling because of cheaper electricity produced from natural gas and renewable energy. Mark Mayfield.
Mudslides and heavy flooding caused terrible traffic conditions around Los Angeles County.
Powerful storm turning city streets into rushing rivers. Flash flooding left drivers underwater.
All the drains are filled and everything's full of mud.
That's NBC's Miguel Amaguer. There was a mudslide on Pacific Coast Highway yesterday morning. No injuries were reported, but residents nearby were told to shelter in place. In other parts of the county, rock and debris flows have slowed traffic and water has caused dozens of accidents. New homes in California will need to have rooftop solar panels starting in 2020. The state's Building Standards Commission this week unanimously approved making solar panels part of California's building code. This will make California the first state in the nation to require solar energy installations on most new homes. It's estimated to add about $9,500 to the cost of a new home, and critics worry that that will make homes out of reach for some of Californians. Today marks the 77th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. On December 7, 1941, the Pearl Harbor Naval Base was devastated by a surprise blitz of Japanese warplanes. President Franklin D. Roosevelt declared war on Japan the next day.
Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
When it was over, more than 2,300 Americans were dead, and another 1,100 were wounded, and five battleships, including the USS Arizona, were sunk or severely damaged. More than 180 aircraft were also destroyed. The attack dealt a crippling blow to the U.S. Pacific Fleet and drew the United States into World War II, and it stood as the deadliest attack on America until the terrorist attacks of September 11th in 2001. And did you hear about that principal in Nebraska, actually Elkhorn, Nebraska, which, I'll be honest, is literally 10 minutes from my home? There was an elementary school principal in Nebraska who was placed on leave after telling teachers to avoid decorating their classrooms with candy canes. The candy canes were banned because they were, in her words, unfortunately, looked too much like a J, which stands for Jesus. Okay, well, the school fortunately saw things in a different way, and they said, common sense, please, here, common sense. And so they have suspended her, and she's been placed on leave and said, yes, you can use those Christmas-themed candy canes, use them, no problem, because even though, yes, historically, that the candy cane does have some religious significance way back when, it really in today's world simply is seen as a holiday symbol that is okay in the school. All right, okay, common sense. A win for common sense. It's 14 past the hour. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking with Doug Kegg, president and COO of EWTN. Later in the hour, Matthew Bunsen is with us, and then we'll wrap up today with Isabel Chow, a University of Berkeley student who stood up for her faith right there on campus. Campus paid a big price for it, but we're going to talk to her and see how things are today. So stay with us. There's a lot more to come this hour on Catholic Connection. Seventeen past the hour, Sherry Brown Regan for Teresa Tamio. So happy you're here on this first Friday, a first Friday in Advent, no less, and the Feast of St. Ambrose and the Eve of the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. Just wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to take time in this Advent celebration. What the rest of the world says is the Christmas celebration, hey, we Catholics, we're still in Advent, and it's an opportunity for us to join with Mary in that anticipation of the birth of our Lord. And to talk about that and other things, Doug Keck, President and COO of EWTN, is here with us. Hey, Doug, how are you?
It's great. It's great to hear you on the air there, Sherry. It sounds terrific, as always.
Well, you are very, very kind. I appreciate that, and the check's in the mail. But now, if I go...
I expect an increase next year, okay? You know, there is a cost of living going into next year, okay?
That's right. All right, I'll do my research and make it commensurate. You got it, my friend.
Okay, very good.
Well, you know, it's wonderful. I love this Advent season. I mean, there is no better time of the year for us to simply reflect on what God has done for us. And if I know you, Mr. Doug Keck, you are busy down there at EWTN. Never a dull moment, and there's a lot of things going on to observe Advent, Christmas, and the Immaculate Conception.
Absolutely. I think as you were talking, one of the toughest things and the biggest challenges we all have who work in Catholic media is try to keep Advent up front during these weeks leading up to Christmas, the Christmas season, because the way it's getting now, I mean, it seems like as soon as Halloween's over, it's virtually Christmas, and you know, people put their decorations, it seems, earlier. Christmas songs are being played earlier, all because, unfortunately, because I think people want to drive people to buy more stuff for Christmas. So with that being the situation, you know, we do have solid Advent programming, and we're trying to keep that forefront. But as you mentioned, coming into this weekend, of course, we've got the Immaculate Conception programming. Events starting, obviously, on this Saturday, the 8th, and we've got the events coming from the Mass, coming from the Shrine in Washington, as always. We've got a special episode with Father Joseph and Father Mark called the EWTN Holy Land Experience, focusing on our Blessed Mother. We've also got Pope Francis's homage to the Immaculate Conception, and there's also some other events. Our own friars are doing a Mass. We also, excitingly, and we had Bishop Cordiglione on this past week talking about this Mass of the Americas from the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Assumption in San Francisco, and that's going to be an exciting event that's going to be happening simultaneously there. And at Our Lady of Guadalupe, they're going to be attributed to both of those at the same time as the first of these events. We're happy to be participating. And we've also got a Mass coming up for the veneration of the Incorrupt Heart of St. John Vianney, coming from Washington as well. And what was exciting about that was Peter Sonsky from the Knights was able to stop by. They're touring the heart, actually, and stop by EWTN. He was on with Father Mitch for a few minutes on Wednesday night. So people at EW10 were actually lucky enough to be able to go and venerate the heart. And it's perfect because today is actually EW10's Advent Retreat Day. So if you happen to be calling in EW10, you might get less response than normal because most of the staff is able to take advantage of this Advent Retreat, which they get up to spend some time with the sisters up in Hansville, which everyone looks forward to every year. And of course, we still have our... Right, exactly, our Holy Hour for Healing. And then we roll right into December 12th with Our Lady of Guadalupe events coming out of course, Rome. There's an event with the Holy Father, our friars, and then there's also going to be the Mass itself coming out of Los Angeles, which was one of the big Masses. And so you can check out all of our Marian-related programming happening between the 8th and the 12th. Just go to EW10.com, get all that great information.
Gosh, just listening to you made me exhausted, Doug.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of hardworking, very tired people who spend endless hours, as you indicated, putting together these programming lists. And as you know, television and radio never sleep. They always continue. So even when other people are off or holidays happen and things like that, we still have to program and get the programming out there so that people can enjoy it when they do have time off.
Well, that's right, and it's so important for us to be able to tune in and, turn on the television, turn on the radio, and to get that programming, because we've come to really depend on EWTN. I mean, really, that's what it is. It's a wonderful relationship where we know we're going to get that solid Catholic programming all the time, 24/7. And so to be able to do that, though, that takes many, many hands, many dollars, too. Hint, hint.
Right.
But and that's not just the check I'm sending to Doug. That does not fund the network.
Right.
No.
And part of Advent is preparation. So if one want to think in terms of supporting EWTN at the end of the year, it's always great. Obviously, this is a big time of the year for us to try to catch up to pay our bills as well. But, as you were saying, talking about with the priests, the first thing is prayer. That's the number one thing we want people to do. The sisters in adoration and mother with the centrality of Eucharistic adoration is the real powerhouse behind EWTN. But again, the only way to keep the lights on around that prayer vigil is for people to feel called, and only if you're called, to support our work. And if you do feel called, that's great. And what we like to say to people a lot of times is, if you've been given the gift of EWTN in the sense of it helping you get back to the faith or helping you live out your faith Sunday to Sunday, or maybe it's helped your mom or your grandmother in her final days, or it's a way for someone who can't get out to Mass to feel part of a Catholic family, if you've been given that gift, then like our Lord said, it's our obligation to spread the good news and spread that gift, whether it's Catholic radio or another Catholic apostolate. It's really our job not to build tents on Mount Tabor and stay there and say, well, I'm set, but really say, if this helped me, it's my obligation to tell other people about it.
Yeah, so very true. Well, let's talk a little bit, Doug, about that the Mass for venerating the heart of St. John Vianney. I have never been, nor have ever heard of a Mass for something like that. What's that like?
Well, it's actually being organized out of the shrine in Washington, and I'm assuming it's like any other particular Mass, except that would be featuring, veneration of his incorrupt heart, and that's the part that's important, too. His heart is incorrupt. And, you think about it today, and we were talking about the priesthood in that prayer group, and we're talking about, unfortunately, the priest scandal. Well, John Vianney is, in many ways, the great idol of priests, in the sense of someone who spent an incredible amount of time where? I mean, he was not a smart guy. He had a lot of trouble being ordained. He ended up becoming this saint who was known for sitting in the confessional 14 hours a day. And, you think about it today and say, that's what we all need. We need to go to confession, but we also need to realize that our Lord, in all his mercy, like John Vianney, is waiting to forgive us. He's waiting there for that to be aspect in our lives so that can bring us back. And that's what's really important, that we think about John Vianney in that way. And the fact that with all the corruption in the world, his heart's incorrupt.
His heart is incorrupt. Yeah. Amazing. So all that's coming up at EWTN. And Doug, as always, thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks for the great work that you and all those wonderful folks at EWTN do for us.
Keep us in your prayers.
You got it. All right. There goes Doug Keck. Coming up next, we'll be talking with Matthew Bunsen. So a lot more to come here on Catholic Connection. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. Sherry Brownrigg, hosting for Teresa Tomeo. It's about 29 minutes past the hour. Translate into 31 before the next hour. All right? You see how that math works? Well, today is a wonderful day. It's a first Friday in Advent, and a first Friday in Advent. Also, it is the Feast of St. Ambrose, and we are just about to celebrate the the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. Today is the eve of that, and so wonderful to have that there. My goodness, my phone is responding. Something about the Immaculate Conception set off my Bixby. There you go. Well, we've got with us this segment Matthew Bunsen, a good friend of the show and a good friend of mine. And Dr. Matthew Bunsen, welcome.
Good morning. Always good to be with you.
Well, it is indeed. And, you know, in thinking about what to talk about this morning, here's the funny thing. I'm gonna throw you under the bus, my friend, because to all of our listeners, Dr. Matthew Bunsen can talk about almost anything. I have never found a subject that I could stump you on. I've never found, and so I'd like to actually kind of pitch a show to EWTN where it would just be called Stumping Matthew Bunsen.
Well, somebody actually proposed this idea of, I think it was actually Doug Keck who came up with this initial idea of something called Bunsen Burners. And it would be sort of along those very lines. So as always, Doug is way ahead of us.
Well, I'm writing this down. Bunsen Burners, yes, indeed. And it would just be sort of like, okay, knitting in Sweden, go. And you would be able to talk about it. We'd give you 2 minutes and then the next subject. So, all right, well, I'll get with Doug and then we'll get this worked out. So I hope you'll enjoy
okay,
it.
Okay, well, all I can say is that in terms of trying to stump me, you haven't tried very hard.
Do not tempt me about that. All right. Well, you know, the first thing I want to talk about is something that's kind of obvious. I mean, you really are, you know, one of the foremost experts on the papacy and Pope Francis that we have in the U.S. And a big announcement yesterday that he's going to the United Arab Emirates in February. I mean, that's big news.
It is. This is the first time that a pope has visited the Gulf, but it's also well in keeping with a lot of the travels that Pope Francis has undertaken in the 5 years that he's been pope. He's been to, for example, to Egypt, which is a very significant event for the life of the Church, and especially as we're trying to develop and continue to develop, not just interreligious dialogue, but what Pope Francis calls the culture of encounter with Islam. And it has two very important practical values to it. The first, of course, is building peace, promoting peace and dialogue with the Islamic world, but also to do everything we can to promote and help the cause of Christians who live as minorities within so many of the Islamic countries. So for Pope Francis, those two objectives, I think, have been very keen and very much on his radar, building, as he has, on the work of previous popes, I think especially of Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI.
Well, you know, it's no surprise then when you really lay it out that way that, yes, this indeed is something very in keeping with what Pope Francis would do. What has the response been from the Islamic world?
Well, what we saw with the Pope's visit to Egypt, it was a very favorable one. There's this recognition, I think, also that the Islamic world, or much of it anyway, sees Pope Francis and the papacy in general as key players in promoting dialogue and peace, but also in building stable environments, politically and socially. But the other thing that the papacy represents to so many in the Islamic world is this common ground, certainly what they see is the promotion of family life. There was back, I think, in 1995, in the papacy of Pope St. John Paul II, this sort of alliance of sorts between the Holy See and a lot of Islamic leaders in resisting the imposition of what we now recognize as the culture of death. I think especially at the very famous, even infamous, Cairo Conference, in which the Holy See found so much common ground with Muslim countries in resisting the imposition of contraception and abortion and euthanasia and horrible versions of sex ed that were trying to be imposed on so much of the world. So in Pope Francis, you have somebody who speaks very frequently about what he calls ideological colonization, especially in places like Africa, where you have aid from the West that is so badly needed, tied to the acceptance of what we as Catholics and what so many Muslims see as abhorrent ideas and practices, including the imposition, again, of the contraceptive culture, of abortion, of euthanasia, and now what Pope Francis also calls gender ideology. So there's a lot of discussion points between the Holy See and Islamic leaders.
What does the Vatican hope will be the outcome of this visit, which, by the way, is the 3rd through the 5th of February?
That's right. Now, he's visiting the Arab world again, as the Vatican's spokesman, Greg Burke, put it, as a culture of encounter. In other words, the Holy Father wants to go to a place like the UAE, which is considered one of the more moderate states in the Islamic world, as a platform, as a door opener to other parts of the Islamic world. For example, he's also going to Morocco early next year. So he's systematically approaching different Islamic locations where he can find these partners for encounter, for dialogue, who can then themselves speak out to the less moderate parts of the Islamic world, which, as we know, there are many.
Yeah.
And it's a similar approach that we saw, I would argue, to the rapprochement that developed between the United States and Cuba that Pope Francis played such a significant role in organizing, that he recognized in a place like Cuba a door that we could open toward more constructive dialogue with the socialist regimes that have been established across whole parts of Latin America. That if the church can become a partner with even a regime like Cuba in promoting aspects of human rights and civil rights and a real authentic dialogue toward peace, then much can be accomplished in having that constructive dialogue with those other countries as well. So I think we're seeing play out here as a kind of grand strategy on the part of the Holy See with regard to this Islamic world.
Wow. Well, you know, I look at on Vatican News, they've got information about this visit, and there's actually a beautiful logo. Even looking at that logo tells you that the goal is peace.
Yes, it's a dove carrying an olive branch.
Yeah.
And it's an appeal for dialogue.
An appeal for dialogue, yeah. All right, well, we're going to talk more with Dr. Matthew Bunsen and even about his new show, Bunsen Burners. I'm kidding, not a real show. But we will talk about his new show, which is The Church Alive, and that comes on the other side of the break. Stay with us. More to come here on Catholic Connection. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. It's 39 past the hour, having a lovely conversation with Dr. Matthew Bunsen of EWTN. And he has a terrific series on the Doctors of the Church. I hope you've had a chance to actually see that. And I understand you've got a new radio show that will debut in January, The Church Alive. Talk about that. What's that going to be about? It sounds wonderful.
Yes, I'm excited to be even a small part of this new program. It'll be airing weekly on Saturdays and Sundays on EWTN Radio. And premieres January 5th, and my co-hosts are Brian Patrick, of course, famous Brian Patrick, and also Father Thomas Petrie, who, it's important to note, as of today anyway, as far as I know, has the largest social media presence, certainly on Twitter, of any Dominican in the world. And Father Thomas is dean of the Dominican House of Studies and is a brilliant moral theologian. And somebody who is just fun to talk to. And the premise of the show is, as the title says, is The Church Alive. And we're going to be talking about the life of the church every week. What happened in the life of the church? What sort of events took place? We're going to not necessarily dissect it analytically from a news standpoint, but to look at events through that Catholic lens, but also to help people understand a little bit more about the liturgical events of the week, of the feast days, the solemnities that might have taken place, and then how to get the most out of the feast days that are coming up the following week.
Wow.
So it's going to be a show that's really oriented toward that Catholic lens, as I was saying, and I can't wait to take part. And, of course, having co-hosts like Father Petrie and Brian Patrick on board, I have the easiest job in radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll be fighting for that microphone, I'm just telling you. Well, honestly, actually, it's going to be a great show, because when you think about someone like myself listening to that, you know, I can't really in my day-to-day, because the work of marketing and PR in the church is very busy, and, you know, you can't really dissect a lot of those different things. And to be able to have help like this to do so, is really a great boon to all of us. So, you know, it's funny. I never really knew that there was a hole for that. But now that you mentioned the show is coming, there was a hole in the lineup for something just like this.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And tune in, if for no other reason than based on all of our conversations previously, and we had a chance to work together for a couple of days in Rome covering the Synod for EWTN television. And we had a lot of fun. And if nothing else, as I was saying, you may not enjoy it, but we certainly will.
Is that your marketing line?
Yes, that's my marketing line.
You may not enjoy it, but we certainly will. Okay. Well, you mentioned that you were going to be talking about feast days, and of course today is the feast of St. Ambrose, and you've written a lot about the saints, and, you know, he's one that we go, all right, it's in, you know, Advent, and you kind of, there's St. Ambrose, and then you go on to the next day. Tell us a little bit about St. Ambrose. I'm getting the sense here that he's really not getting his due.
No, and it's unfair, because it is thanks to St. Ambrose, Archbishop of Milan, or Bishop of Milan, Father of the Church, Doctor of the Church. He's going to be one of my episodes in the series before too long. That he's somewhat eclipsed by the very person that he brought into the church, and that, of course, is St. Augustine. And it tells you something about Ambrose of Milan, that Augustine, who had roamed so much of the world, seeking, as Pope Benedict XVI put it, the truth, and was constantly disappointed, was always discovering that those he was talking to were frauds and charlatans, I think, for example, the Manichaeans, that when he encountered Ambrose of Milan, he met his match. And he met somebody not only who was able to answer all of his questions, the many, many questions that Augustine had about faith and philosophy and faith and reason, but Ambrose was able to introduce him to something that Augustine had not really encountered before, and that was an understanding of what love really means. And that is to focus yourself completely on Christ. And that, for that alone, Ambrose should be hailed by all of history, that he's the man who brought into the church and who set on the course for greatness Augustine, and a doctor of the church, another father of the church, and one of the greatest minds in the history of the church. So that right there is all we need to know about Ambrose, but there's so much more about him that people tend to forget.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you put it into that perspective, because I don't want to say in popular culture, but it's really kind of, you know, Catholic culture, we do hold up Augustine as one of those great saints. And so to think about, this is the man who brought Saint Augustine and, you know, taught him, brought him into the church. I mean, that tells you so much about Ambrose and his knowledge, his holiness, you know, all the things that we should revere him for today. What is he really known for in terms of his cult?
Well, Ambrose was Bishop of Milan at a time when Milan had eclipsed Rome. It was the most powerful city in the Western Empire. So as Bishop of Milan, then he wielded this immense influence. He was somebody, though, who had not really anticipated an ecclesiastical career. He'd been a prefect or a governor in the Roman Empire and was in that region. He was governor of northern Italy and came to Milan to try to solve some of the ecclesiastical troubles that were there, because there was a great division in the city among the Arians and the Orthodox Christians. And both of them revered him so much that when it came time to pick a new bishop, both of them wanted Ambrose. And Ambrose did, as I always joke, he did the sensible thing that any logical person would do. He ran for his life. And the emperor essentially ordered him to become Bishop of Milan, which he did. But once he did, and this is that classic story, he never looked back. And he became one of the greatest theologians in the church, but he was also one of the strongest voices for Orthodox Christianity in the church. So the Arians, who thought that they would be able to manipulate him, that this was some political creature, were horribly disappointed, because from the start, Ambrose proved more than their match in defying their demands to have a place in the church and refuting the Arian heresy. But then he also introduced hymnology into the West, that we thank him for today. And he was also one of the greatest homilists in the history of the church. One of my favorite stories is that mothers were very reluctant to bring their daughters to hear him preach because he was so brilliant as a preacher and convincing people that they should turn their life completely to prayer and contemplation, that they were worried their daughters are going to run off and sort of join the convent instead of marrying.
Oh, how I wish that would happen today.
Yes, exactly. We need more Ambroses of every possible stripe.
We absolutely do. Well, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, it's always sad when we have to let you go because it's so much fun talking to you about everything and anything. And, you know, I'll keep working on those subjects that I can challenge you on. Right now I'm thinking about, well, building campfires. Do you know about that?
Okay. No, I don't.
What? I've stumped you?
You've stumped me already. See, that this is easier than people think.
Yeah, I think you're just being nice to me, that's all. But anyway, thank you, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, for being with us today. Have a blessed feast of St. Ambrose and a blessed solemnity of the Immaculate Conception tomorrow.
You too. A joy to be with you, as always, and God bless everyone.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. There goes Dr. Matthew Bunsen of EWTN. We stumped him on something. He said he doesn't know anything about building campfires, so I have a feeling he was just being nice. But the show continues here, Catholic Connection. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Isabella Chow, and she's a student at UC Berkeley. We're going to talk about how she stood up for her faith on campus and what happened next. So stay with us. More to come here on Catholic Connection. Welcome back to Catholic Connection. About 10 minutes before the top of the hour, Sherry Brownrigg here. And as promised, we have with us Isabella Chow, and she's a student at UC Berkeley in California. She stood up for her faith, and we're going to hear about that. Good morning, Isabella. Awfully early where you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being on. And can you tell us in just a few minutes here, tell us what happened? First of all, I know that you are a student senator there. And you were really kind of talking about standing up for your faith as it relates to life and really gender issues. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. Yeah, so essentially, the student government here at Berkeley drafted a bill that opposed Trump's proposed Title IX changes. And specifically, this bill opposed a clause in Trump's proposed changes where Trump wants to define a person's gender as a person's biological sex. Now, a majority of the student government bill I didn't have a problem with because they were generic endorsements for legal protections and freedom from discrimination and harassment against LGBTQ and specifically transgender individuals. But where that bill crossed the line for me was that certain clauses asked me to promote LGBTQ identities and lifestyles that conflicted with my religious beliefs as a Christian, and it also helped ask me to endorse organizations whose primary purpose is to promote an LGBTQ identity and lifestyle. And because of that, on the Senate floor, I abstained from voting on that bill. And afterwards, there were protests. I was essentially ousted of my student government party and every club I've been on campus, except for the Christian clubs and Students for Life. And, it's been pretty crazy. I mean, clubs have disaffiliated with me as a senator. I've been called names over and over on social media and in person just for abstaining on a bill.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry to hear that that has been the fallout. And I also have to tell you how proud that all of us are of you for standing up for that, because I'm sure that, you know, it obviously was something that was visible, that you were seen not voting on this bill. And so, you know, that put you right out there in harm's way. Well, what's going to be happening now? What do you think is the next step there at UC Berkeley and for you?
Yes. So there have been a lot of calls for me to resign, but after giving this careful consideration, I have chosen not to resign. The way campus politics works is that candidates usually cater their votes towards certain populations, and for me, that was the Christian community. And so I do plan on supporting a successor who will be representing the Christian community and will be as explicit about his or her pro-life and biblical values.
We're talking with Isabella Chow. She's a student at UC Berkeley. She stood up for her faith And now she's paying a very heavy price for that. And Isabella, what can we do as listeners across the country? What can we do to help support you?
Yeah, you know, honestly, the encouragement and prayers of Christians all around the world has really carried me in this time. But more than prayers for myself personally and my team, I ask for prayers for the church here at Berkeley and for the students here. Because at the end of the day, yes, you know, my right to free speech is being hindered. But more than this is a free speech issue, this is a people issue. There are people whose hearts are hurting and whose hearts are wounded, you know, in many ways because of the church. And I'm really praying that, you know, our community here can see that our God is a God of righteousness, but also a God of love, right? A God of unconditional love. And I'm praying that the church here at Berkeley will really wrestle with what it means to speak the truth while speaking it in love the way Jesus would have, and to love on the community in a tangible way.
Have you been able to get that message across?
Yeah. I think it's a fine line to walk, you know. I think the church has not done an adequate job of reaching out to the LGBTQ community and really saying, look, we may not disagree with your values, but we do want to love you. But I think the narrative is changing on campus for the better. And I think that the church is starting to respond to this in a way that, you know, really reflects the character of Jesus in the Bible. But we're still wrestling with what exactly that looks like.
Yeah, and it really takes each and every person to understand that message and to be able to deliver it with love. And I see you clearly, Isabella, doing that on campus, you know, in your role, but also one-on-one. So please know that we will be supporting you with our prayers, and we'll look to see what happens next. And I can't thank you enough for getting up so early this morning to be with us on Catholic Connection.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Isabella Chow, she is a student there at UC Berkeley. Wow, I'm so amazed by her composure and by her just really, really sticking to her values. She knows what she believes, and, you know, she knows the truth, really. That is the truth. And she is willing to put herself on the line for all of us. Now that, my friend, is not a leader of the future in the church. She is a leader right now. So thank you so much, Isabella, for that wonderful witness. And thank you for being here with us today. It's been a great day here on Catholic Connection. Happy Feast of St. Ambrose. And blessings and graces may they abound for you on the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception tomorrow. So this is Sherry Brownrigg. Thanks so much for joining us today here on Catholic Connection. God bless.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.